I'm your host, Dennis Dubé, along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser. And I think that intro went off okay. I think I missed the first few words. I'm now reading from my carefully prepared, completely unprepared intro. And we're sponsored by the EQC. Dennis is pretending to be completely unprepared.
It's a brilliant simulation.
A brilliant gambit, yes.
Being entirely unprepared.
We're sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state.
Wait, who?
I've memorized that, if nothing else. We're trying to come to you live every, every
Wednesday.
First and third Wednesday of each month. And, today, this is completely screwed.
Keep going. Okay. Keep going.
Today is
Don't stop.
September, October, is it 16th?
18.
Oh.
I believe so.
Is it?
Or is it 16?
16. I thought so. I knew I was waiting for the 17th to roll around at some point. We're here.
How about we sit back, relax,
and listen to the show. I know I'm going to relax because I've been running ragged all week.
Funny thing is, we have like one studio audience member today who this is the first episode she's ever heard.
Right, so the completely unprepared intro.
Yay!
Yay. Yeah. This is a real class act, let me tell you.
Yep. Absolutely profesh.
No problem.
Everything's fine. The show has begun, right?
Yeah.
We're not professionals. We're just some dorks on the radio.
That's right.
Not even on the radio. We're on the internet, and that's an even lower entry bar.
Right. And we
heard that you can make any job sound stupid just by adding on the internet. I'm a writer.
And guess what? We have no advertisers.
Right. Oh, I'm in marketing on the internet.
Apart from the fact that we're off to a rocky start, did everybody have an okay week?
I sure did. I saw Book of Mormon.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Do you got a report on that for us?
I have a report on the blog. I can tell you about it live too. Also,
yeah. Sure, for our listeners.
Book of Mormon is a super irreverent musical by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, who are already known for doing super irreverent musicals.
Yes,
I loved the South Park movie and
Team America. Oh, awesome.
And you may know that Trey and Matt already did a Mormon episode that was a musical already, where they just go around telling the story of Mormon that was dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, you know.
Yeah.
And this was not that.
Okay, what was this?
They tell the story of Mormon, sort of, but it's incidental to the rest of the story. Like, they have actors come on and play Joseph Smith and Jesus and Moroni.
Wow.
Like, in minor scenes.
But not Muhammad, I hope.
Right. But really, the heroes are these two kids who are just entering they're 19, so they have to go on their mission. And the one guy who's like, you know, super Mormon, he's a really good student, and he's like, I'm going to change the world, but, you know, I want my mission to be in Orlando, because that's my favorite place in the world.
Oh, sacrifice.
And then they're like, you're going to be paired with Elder Cunningham here, who's this misfit fat kid who compulsively lies and hasn't read the book.
And hijinks follow, I imagine.
Right, and their mission is not, in fact, in Florida. It's in Uganda.
Okay, good.
Now, this is a stage play, is it?
Yes, it's a...
Wow.
It's like a professional musical. It won Tony Awards. Uh-huh. They're like, at the Tony Awards in 2012, they bring out Neil Patrick Harris as doing one of the numbers from Book of Mormon. This is a big deal.
Huh. Uh-huh. cool.
And you saw it here in Austin?
I did, yes. They're traveling.
So it's on the road now.
Yeah, their last day was Sunday.
Are Parker and Stone actually in it?
Only by voiceover. Apparently, Trey Parker is recorded as the voice of Jesus in a couple of scenes. Jesus comes in and he says, "You abandoned your mission partner? You're a dick." and then he's like, "I can't believe Jesus called me a dick." So it's like that. And there's this adorable song where they go to Africa and the fat kid expects it to be just like Lion King. So when he finds out that there's this special saying that they all have for when things seem too bad, he's like, "Does it mean no worries for the rest of your days?" And the guy's like, "Kind of." In English, it means "fuck you, God."
The circle of life is great until it's personal.
So I don't want to spoil it, but by the end, they have sort of generated a new gospel that everybody believes, even though it's completely full of shit.
Cool. Well, so, that's all gospel as far as we're concerned.
Yeah. So if you can, and I'll just repeat what I said in giant letters on the blog, go see it.
Okay.
Cool.
I don't know why people... I guess the people talk about like giving away stuff about things other people haven't seen as spoiling it. To me, spoiling it would be if I went, you know, you could spoil it by jumping up on stage and kicking the main character in the balls in the middle of the show. That would be spoiling it.
Well,
telling me what's going to happen is a thing. It's a thing I don't like. I wouldn't call it spoiling it because it's as good as it's going to be with or without whatever you say about it.
Yeah, but I like going into things not really knowing anything.
Yeah.
I just nitpick. Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this a generally good policy in life?
It is the only policy in life.
I'm just being picky about language
for entertainment's
sake. It's fun.
I guess you could say old people have been through life before, and so they can offer spoilers.
Yeah, like,
it all ends in nothing.
Yeah. Wow. Nothing you do amounts to anything. I'm just telling you now, Sonny.
Hey, it's going to suck when you break your hip. You know.
Wow. Yeah, but I wouldn't say that person had spoiled it for me. Comes pre-spoiled.
The spoilage is part of life.
So Book of Mormon.
Thumbs up.
All right, cool. Okay.
And you can get the soundtrack anyway.
I'll wait for the movie.
You can't see it.
It's going to be a movie. You just know it. Yeah. Starring who? I don't know. We'll find
those guys, is there a medium of entertainment they have not dabbled in?
Because
they've done movies,
games,
they've
right?
done stage plays. They did a video game?
Yeah.
I mean, there
was
stuff as a parody.
There was like a Nintendo 64 South Park. But
did they make it? I'm talking about, like, they have made movies. They have made TV series. They have made animated cartoons.
Yeah.
They have made, they did sitcoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
A musical?
The George Bush TV series. Remember that?
They did that?
Yeah, that was them.
Oh.
Cool.
Our pal George or whatever it was called.
Oh, my
that's
gosh.
That's my Bush.
I never saw an episode of that.
That was not very good. I didn't see an episode.
That was them. And now stage and puppet movie.
Yes, they did puppetry. I guess they haven't done sand art yet. So.
That old person earlier who was saying you'll never amount to anything. I think they're not always right.
That's right.
Those guys have amounted to something.
If you keep,
yeah,
did you
I
know,
would say so.
Did
if you,
you
keep
know,
cutting up in class, you'll never amount to anything.
Has anybody got this week's Oprah story?
I have.
Have you?
How about that?
I don't have it, so
go for it. That's a segue of a sort.
All right.
Not that really had anything to do with what we were talking about. It's Parker and Stone. Kind of atheism heroes, though.
They haven't done a talk show.
Is one of them an atheist and one of them actually still a Mormon?
One of them's like a Jew.
One of them is a Jew?
Yeah, Matt Stone is
neither of them
very
an atheist,
Jew-y.
And that we just like them because they're really irreverent? Is that what it is?
I think they're the kind of people who are, like, kind of douchey about being iconoclasts. So when they do episodes about atheism, like, you know, they like to be the sort of, oh, we make fun of everybody equally and we have no stake in anything.
Right. Yes, so, I'm sure they'll appreciate our pigeonholing.
So I think they had an episode of
Dawkins being a child molester or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody could be a target.
Which can be smugly annoying in its own way. But,
true.
You know.
All right. Well, anyway, but this woman who swam to Cuba.
Yeah.
Which, in my opinion, she was going the wrong direction. But but after many, many attempts, that she is an atheist.
Yes.
Diana Nyad.
She's 64.
Can
which
we
is,
pause for a moment to notice how appropriate her last name is? The Naiads were the Greek, like, water spirits.
Oh.
Yep.
And she swam
from
Florida to Cuba.
It's actually from Cuba to Florida.
She did go Cuba to Florida?
She went the
correct
way.
She went the correct direction.
Well, she was with the flow of traffic. I'll put it that way.
Right. Right.
Sure. it's a 110-mile trip, and she was swimming for 53 hours.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's crazy.
I don't know that I can stay awake for 53
hours. She swam 53 hours that time.
Right.
Because this was not her first attempt.
Sure, okay.
And
I haven't pre-screened this story, I'm telling you.
But
so
you know the
I
story,
have to
right?
believe
she
whatever
has
you
been,
say.
She has been trying to do this on and off for years and years and years.
I did not know that.
And her face every time got all stung by jellyfish and stuff. Did you see the pictures of her when she came out of the water? It was not pretty.
No.
Because apparently when jellyfish sting your lips, sting your lips, they blow up like balloons. It's bad.
Okay.
But amazing accomplishment.
So she goes on Oprah, and she says, at some point she remarks, I'm an atheist and I'm in awe, or something like that.
So you didn't even see the interview, which I did.
Sorry. But I did bring a computer with these news stories, and
that is correct. I didn't bring that story.
So between us, we are one competent host.
That's right.
Yes, we are each one third of a competent host.
Exactly.
Because it takes three of us.
Can I mention one thing though? It's just a tiny change. Having the microphones up on these platforms has transformed the entire vibe of this show for me.
Oh, you think we're more up?
No, yeah. Well, being able to look at you while I talk makes a surprising difference.
Well, speak for yourself, because I'm over here sharing a mic with Russell.
Right.
So I get to stare at some bits of sound absorption foam while I speak. And I don't get a lot. It's not like I get
I'm on a diagonal audience with Dennis with the microphone between you and me, so our eyes are locked.
Right. Across the room.
If either of you is nervous, you can do the trick where you imagine that the person you're speaking to is naked. I can't. I don't have that recourse.
Right.
Right.
You can imagine that foam is naked, though.
That's right.
It's already naked. Look at it.
Well, then that makes it easy.
So Diana Nyad.
I'm going to turn on the backscatter in my glasses. There we go.
So Oprah, okay, so you want to role play this discussion?
Oh, good grief.
No, please.
Okay, so Nyad hears the dialogue. She says, I can stand at the beach's edge with the most devout Christian, Jew, Buddhist, go on down the line, and weep with the beauty of this universe and be moved by all of humanity. All the billions of people who have lived before us, who have loved and hurt and suffered. To me, my definition of God is humanity and is the love of humanity. And as we return to... Now, to me, this is... Even this is a little too sappy for my taste.
Oh, sure, sure.
Whatever. And Oprah says,
I'll do Oprah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead. Oprah says,
I already read that part.
Oh. Well, I don't call you an atheist, then. I think if you believe in the awe and the wonder and the mystery, then that is what God is. That is what God is. God is not the bearded guy in the sky. Right.
Okay.
So that's, which is just, you know, entirely typical believers trying to latch hold of anything nice and positive and claim the responsibility for their God.
Right. And only someone like Oprah can say that. I mean, someone who is like a very sincere Christian or Mormon would probably be disgusted by it.
You think so? You don't think very sincere Christians and Mormons believe that their God gets credit for all the good stuff in the
world? Well, a Mormon's God is not a bearded guy in the sky. He's a bearded guy on planet Kolob. But, you know, people who really believe in a literal God guy don't take kindly to trying to turn him into some kind of metaphor some of the time.
Right, right.
Right. Well, do you consider yourself a spiritual person even as an atheist?
I do.
We're playing Winfrey and Nyan again, for those of you listening at home.
I don't think there's any contradiction in those terms. I think you can be an atheist who doesn't believe in an overarching being who created all of this and sees over it. But there is spirituality, because we human beings and we animals and maybe even we plants, but certainly the ocean and the moon and the stars, we all live with something that is cherished and we feel the treasure of it.
I'm not reading that last line because that's the stupid really is beyond me. Well, I believe that and feel that so deeply. It's why every time I enter my yard or leave, I say, hello, trees.
And then she gets the Dave Silverman face, which you can't see on the radio. Right. But just Google Dave Silverman rage face and imagine she's making that face.
Yeah, it's not that confrontational, the actual thing.
No.
I watched the video. It's not confrontational or hostile or anything. It's just, you know, Oprah Winfrey trying to claim credit for all things good for her imaginary friend, which is just utterly typical.
Yeah, and Oprah says, well, that's not really atheism. No, it is.
Yeah, sorry.
Atheism means you don't believe in any gods. It doesn't mean that you can't, like, feel odd about the moon and the stars and stuff.
Yeah, if you get to tell us what's not really atheist, then we get to tell you what's not really Christian.
And that's a reason why I don't like using the word spiritual as a sop to religious people.
Yeah.
I like saying that I'm awed and impressed and moved and inspired and stuff, but I don't like saying spiritual. Because
not without first laying the groundwork.
Right.
If we're going to have a conversation,
too easy to misinterpret.
Yeah, if we're going to lay the groundwork first and establish, okay, what exactly is meant by spiritual?
Yeah, it's
if you Christian believe that by definition the word spiritual means, you know, related up to of or related to your invisible friend, then no, I'm not that.
If but I'm not all criticizing you mean, Nyad.
If
really.
All you mean. Well, no, she's on an interview with this person, and she's trying to put the best face on atheism, and I thought she did a great job.
Sure.
Very cool.
So that happened.
Does anybody have the Scalia interview?
Yes. I'm all over this.
It's
time for hate mail, right?
No, I didn't. You know what? No hate mail today.
No hate
mail. All you people that hate us can go F yourselves. I just listener mail. Plain old
listener mail.
Listener mail from around the world. Dear prophets.
Wait.
Hey. It says, dear prophets.
It's our name is non-prophets.
I know. We're not off to a good start here.
Nope.
With this non-hate mail. This is just a quick email for you. And keep in mind, I am a listener, so you owe me your time. Which is
he obviously
referencing our criticism.
Yes.
Is he joking?
Yes, he's joking. Oh, of course, okay.
Referencing our previous discussion of
an object of my hate.
Of the haters who seem to believe that because they have listened to our show, they deserve the right to interact with us at great length in email. And I'm sorry, you have us, you know, we'll listen, we'll read your thing, maybe we'll respond, and maybe not. For as long as we feel like it. It's our show. he goes
so
on.
There.
The show is great, I love listening to it, and it is always entertaining. But as for everyone who writes you hate mail, do they know that they are not forced to listen? And they are not getting paid? If one of your opinions differs from mine, it's a good thing. I then evaluate my view based on what you say, plus further reading. If I still differ, I move on. Just really wanted to let you know I am a big fan of the show, and thank you for your time. On another subject, I am a fighter paramedic in Ohio, and people ask me how I can be an atheist in this field, even though I see God's help on every call I go on. My only response to this is, I see horrible things every day, and if that's God's work, he doesn't deserve to exist.
Ooh, nice.
Hasadiga Ibawai. Fuck you, God.
Nice.
That's their catchphrase. Uh-huh.
By the way, if we are supposed to get paid, I haven't received a check yet. Thank you, Brandon in South Carolina. Well, thank you, Brandon. Thank you for listening. Thanks for your support.
We should think about paying our listeners. That'd be great.
Dennis, what do you has?
What do I have?
Do you need a little prep time there before
I need a little prep time.
We'll go back to Russell.
Do you has cheeseburger? Sorry. Scalia. Scalia had a long-ass interview in New York Magazine this week.
Yeah.
And I had to hunt through this to find the relevant quotes. Scalia, in my opinion, is not a deep thinker. I just have to say that ahead of time.
Dude, he's on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I don't care. He's not. Here we go. Shoot. okay, here we go. You believe in heaven and hell? Asks the interviewer. Oh, of course I do. Don't you believe in heaven and hell? No. Oh, my.
Wait a minute. Is this Scalia or is this
George Takei?
George Takei. I didn't know George Takei was on the Supreme Court. That would be awesome.
Boy, that would be a trip, yeah. Wouldn't it?
Well, we got to do the rest of the interview then.
All right.
With Scalia as George Takei. Can you do it or shall I?
I think I can do it.
Okay. Well, I'll do the interview questions.
All right, then.
Does that mean I'm not going?
Unfortunately not.
Wait, to heaven or to hell?
It doesn't mean you're not going to hell just because you don't believe it. That's Catholic doctrine. Everyone is going one place or the other.
But if you don't have to be a Catholic to get into heaven or believe in it?
Of course not.
Oh, so you don't know where I'm going, thank God.
I don't know where you're going. I don't even know whether Judas Iscariot is in hell. I mean, that's the Pope. That's what the Pope meant when he said, who am I to judge? He may have recanted and had severe penance just before he died. Who knows?
Can we talk about your...
I even believe in the devil. Hmm?
You do?
Of course. Yeah, he's a real person. Hey, come on. That's standard Catholic doctrine. Every Catholic believes that.
Every Catholic believes this? There's a wide variety of Catholics out there.
If you're faithful to Catholic dogma, that is certainly a large part of it.
Wait a minute. Stop. Poor George Takei. Why are we dragging him through the mud like this?
I love George Takei.
Okay? Yes.
No disrespect.
Just because Scalia said, oh my, once...
That's true. Okay. No more of that.
All yeah, right. That
he's
was...
Italian, right?
Yes.
Never mind.
All right. Have you seen evidence of the devil lately?
You know, it is curious. In the Gospels, the devil is doing all sorts of things. He's making pigs run off cliffs. He's possessing people and whatnot. And that doesn't happen very much anymore.
No.
Golly.
It's because he's smart.
So what is he doing now?
What he's doing now is getting people not to believe in him or God. He's much more successful that way.
That has really painful implications for atheists. Are you sure that's the devil's work?
I didn't say atheists are the devil's work.
Well, you're saying the devil is persuading people not to believe in God. Couldn't there be other reasons not to believe?
Well, there certainly could be other reasons, but it certainly favors the devil's desires. I mean, come on. That's the explanation for why not there's not demonic possession all over the place. That always puzzled me. What happened to the devil, you know? He used to be all over the place. He used to be all over the New Testament.
Right.
What happened to him?
He just got wilier?
He got wilier.
Isn't it terribly frightening to believe in the devil?
You're looking at me as though I'm weird. My God, are you so out of touch with most of America? Most of which believes in the devil. I mean, Jesus Christ believed in the devil. It's in the Gospels. You travel in circles that are so, so removed from mainstream America that you are appalled that anybody would believe in the devil. Most of mankind has believed in the devil for all of history. Many more intelligent people than you or me have believed in the devil.
I hope you weren't sensing contempt from me. It wasn't your belief that surprised me so much as how boldly you expressed it.
I was offended by that. I really was.
Ladies and gentlemen, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's all over the New Testament.
Argumentum ad populum from a freaking judge.
He's all over the New Testament. Have you ever wondered why he doesn't show up now so much? Maybe because the people who wrote the Old Testament were really gullible.
Yeah, maybe they just made it up.
So, Mr. Supreme Court Justice, we have a case here before you where Party A is accused of doing something, and we're pointing out to you, sir, that there really isn't that much evidence that that party did this thing. Why do you think there's no evidence that he did this thing he's accused of?
Evidence, schmevidence.
Because he's wily. That's why. Because he's wily.
He's got a set of jet-powered skates from Acme.
Now there's two of us now. There's two Antonin Scalias in the room.
Here's what the devil does. He puts a big pile of birdseed over a bunch of ball bearings, and then he has a giant magnet.
That's right.
He's wily, I tell you.
And when that roadrunner comes along and eats the birdseed.
Wow. So we have a Supreme Court Justice.
But a spring breaks and the giant magnet swings around and knocks the coyote himself off the cliff. And that's God's
work.
Dead people running around in heaven and hell. It's like, wow. Just childish.
To be fair to him, Dennis, you called him on argumentum ad populum. But technically, in this interview, he doesn't say that the fact that people believe in the devil is the evidence that the devil exists.
He seems to be suggesting that by what he's saying and how he's saying it.
Clearly, his evidence is, well, there's this ancient book, and that's argument from authority.
Yeah, just there's that, too.
Technically. And also, to be fair to him, he's right. Most people in the United States do believe this crap that he's spouting.
Yeah, yeah.
But do they believe in...
That's not a good thing.
Do they believe in the devil as this red guy, or is it an Oprah devil? It's like, you know, the metaphorical embodiment of bad stuff.
I have seen statistics which, not having them in front of me, I can't cite them exactly, mm-hmm. but I have seen statistics implying that a frighteningly large percentage of the United States population believe in a literal devil.
That's because it's so convenient.
True.
You could probably, since you have that computerizer machine in front of you, you could probably find a statistic while I read more listener mail.
It's because it's so convenient. I mean, there's this evil guy. He comes and tempts you and possesses you and makes you do bad things. So the bad things you do, it's not your fault.
Yeah, it would have been interesting if the interview had gone in the direction of, well, Chief Justice Scalia, if people are being manipulated by the devil into doing bad things, then what are you doing, you know, imposing laws on them? Because it's not their fault they've been manipulated.
Hmm.
That would have been an interesting place for that conversation to go, which it, as far as I know,
but we don't know. I mean, maybe we could get some clues about the interviewer's religion if we read further, but...
It does appear that he was an atheist.
I don't know that he was an atheist. He just seemed... kind of confused. He could have been an Oprah brand spiritualist, for all we know.
But I think he said, no, he didn't believe.
Okay.
In that bit that we read.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Wow. So, okay. Last episode, we had spent a good chunk of the show talking about a listener email on the question of, is it morally bad? Is it immoral to abdicate your own moral judgment and in worshiping some other entity and just doing what it says? And it's a damn good question, right? I mean, we kind of came down on one side of it, but not such that it's absolutely definitive, right? It's the big question is... I think we're left with the question, I've been thinking about this more since last episode, right? I think we're left with the question of, okay, you may have looked at that other entity and made a conscious judgment of it, that it was so reliably moral that it was completely safe for you to give up your independent decision-making on moral issues and just do what it said, right? And if you formulated it that way, it's arguable that it's not immoral. But certainly, if you didn't think about it, or if you thought about it and said, "I don't know, but I'm going to go ahead and throw in with that entity anyway." And certainly, if you evaluated that entity, decided that it was really deeply immoral, and then that is why you were going to follow it. That for sure would be absolutely immoral, right? But there's a little grayness in there, and it was a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, if you start saying things, though, like, it works in mysterious ways, then you're just beyond the pale there. You've abdicated everything at that point, because then you can't even notice if it's doing bad things.
That's an admission that you cannot possibly have evaluated it and determined rationally that it was so reliably moral that it's safe to hang your own decision-making on it, right? If you say that it's beyond understanding. But you're quoting specifically part of Christianity there, and there are other other religions out there that may not say that sort of thing about the God that they have, and we're talking in a broad sense here, right?
Yes. Is it moral to be amoral?
But that's a damn good question. Is it moral to be... the whole point of amorality is amoral decisions are made outside the purview of moral decisions.
Right.
So you can't say that an amoral decision is immoral. You can say that, at worst, you can say, hey, there might have been some moral basis to make that decision on. It's tricky.
Yes, it is. It's tricky.
It comes down to a very fine line in a gray area, and that is why we got a whole bunch of emails about
of course.
It. So our first one is from Robert. It's Says, I'm a regular listener of the nonprofits and greatly enjoy the show every 2 weeks.
Well, then okay. We owe him our time, don't we?
Again, it's not exactly every 2 weeks. It's the first and third Wednesdays.
So far, it's been the first. Wait, have we had a fifth week that we didn't do yet?
There will definitely be fifth weeks. So it's don't set your clock by every other Wednesday. That won't work. I'm also a sophomore political science major at West Virginia University and often attend my friend's philosophy of religion course. I know you're busy people, and then he talks about the discussion that we had. He says, I tend to agree with your judgment of the amorality of the issue, but don't think you went quite far enough in unpacking what it means to worship God. Just to clarify, I'm an atheist / apistivist? Epistemist. You know what?
I've never heard of that before.
Okay.
We have Google at our fingertips.
Look it up. I've attached a short reading from the class, which we're not going to go over, but he says, I know you're busy people, so I'll give a brief synopsis. To worship something, by definition, you must give that thing an unqualified, unlimited claim on your obedience. If you identify some entity as God, even the fact that it is the perfectly powerful, perfectly wise, and perfectly good creator of the universe does not automatically entail that its commands should have an unlimited claim on your actions.
Oh, wait,
that's
what?
Saying that's if you identify that there is a God, that it doesn't have a claim on your actions unless you're saying you're worshiping.
Unless you worship it, that's
the extra bit that comes from worship.
You didn't know the word because it's a made up internet word. It was made up by Bionic Dance, who I have met, Kate Farr from Seattle.
I like her videos a lot.
Okay, good. I've met her twice, in fact.
Okay,
and what does it mean?
It's from the Greek, so it's supposed to be parallel to atheist, and it's one who lacks faith, especially of the religious variety.
Okay.
And at first I thought, how is that different from atheism? But then I realized, you know, there's this separate discussion of whether you should disavow all faith, and she says she does.
Okay, I'm glad it didn't have anything to do with bees.
So back to Robert's synopsis here. So we're on the same page here. He's saying, okay, even if you say you got a thing here that's the perfectly good creator of the universe, blah blah blah, it doesn't necessarily just identifying that doesn't mean that its commands have an unlimited claim on your actions unless you take that further step and say you worship it. The state of being a moral agent, one who is capable of moral actions, requires autonomy of decision-making.
Yes.
Therefore, the idea of worship is incompatible with the idea of being a moral agent. You become incapable of committing a moral or immoral action. See, now,
You are amoral at that point.
Yes, that's how I would put that.
Yeah.
He says, the only viable objection to this argument that we could raise is that since God's will, if she exists, is not obvious for a great many moral decisions, should you hold the door for someone, should you give money to charity X or charity Y, etc., it may be impossible to worship her in the way that the document he attached, which we're not reading, describes. Instead, you can only worship fallible men who obviously don't have such a strong claim on your obedience. In this case, the fact you could commit a potentially immoral act simply by voiding your moral agency is actually immoral, even if the object of your worship only gives moral commands.
Which is just what we...
I hadn't actually read this all the way through before in detail. That's kind of what we were just touching on, right? And when it's the point you brought up, Dennis, that if you say that the moral commands of the deity are at all obscure,
right,
that they take any interpretation, that they are at all mysterious,
that they need apologetics,
then you can't play the "I thought this through and made the judgment that guy is the perfect moral leader." You can't play that card. That you have to have made the decision to obey that in full knowledge of the fact that you couldn't completely trust it.
Right.
However, the argument, he goes on, however, the argument still stands on big issues, i.e., if you refrain from murder because you worship God, it is still amoral, not moral. Right.
Yeah, if you're if you worship a being and follow its instructions, you can claim no credit for your decisions, and others may hold you to blame for your bad ones.
Right. Well, Robert ends by saying, "I hope you find this as interesting as I do." Well, we've only spent a big chunk of last episode and now part of it this one on this question. So, thank you, Robert, very much for your email.
We need another question like that. That was just a really a good thing to talk.
We didn't have one that struck me as being like that, but you know, we're now, you know, back in business and getting quite a bit more email to nonprofits at atheist-community.org than we did for the first couple episodes.
Which is great. People are starting to trust us again.
Which is great, but also
that's for a good reason or not.
Well, they're starting to pay attention to us again.
Yes. Yeah.
I wouldn't make any assumptions about trust.
Worship.
But it also means that we now are, you know, having to pick and choose what is going to make it to the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, you two guys, I've sort of staked out my territory being being listener mail. But
you are getting a lot of mileage out of that listener mail.
But it's going to have to be more than just me because there's too much.
Yeah. I've been bringing in the news.
What we should do is as a policy, you know, if you latch onto a story and say I'm going to respond to this on the show, I want to take this for the show, right, to talk about, just respond to it just to the email list and not back to the original person, because it's none of their business, and we don't want to promise to any listener
that
we're
going
to cover their story, because there's stuff we brought in today we're probably not going to get to.
Yeah.
Right. But amongst us, we better start staking out our territory.
But we don't want people worshiping us, because the world doesn't need more amoral people.
And anybody out there who thinks that we are by in some way perfect moral teachers, you're nuts.
We're
fallible human beings. And by the way, speaking of another fallible human being, this is something I wanted to bring up during our reading of the interview with Scalia.
Yes.
Did you see Bill Maher's video on Scalia and Bachman?
I listened to the entire episode today. So
okay. So yes,
I was probably channeling Bill Maher.
It's fresh
in
your mind.
Yeah, Bill Maher, not a perfect atheist,
no,
by any means.
But
just
no,
as we're not.
He has a hammer and a nail, and he can drive it in exactly the right spot sometimes.
But there's a general, I think, place where the atheist movement is getting to, where we've been going on long enough now that our big figureheads have said enough stuff that included in amongst the, and done enough things that included in their actions and their statements is stuff that is questionable and arguable.
Sure,
like the anti-vax stuff that he was into.
In Bill Maher's case, the anti-vax stuff, right? Occasionally things Dawkins say throw people into a tizzy. Occasionally things that P.Z. Myers says throw people into a tizzy. Occasionally things that Sam Harris says drive me into a frothing frenzy.
Uh-huh.
But I think what we need to do, folks, it's just my personal opinion, it is time we move past the illusion that anybody in the atheist movement is going to be perfect
in my opinion, we never should have gone there in the first place.
But it was a mistake that a lot of us did. And I'll include myself in that, right? Because I've been shocked by some of this stuff. Time to move past that. Appreciate the bits you agree with. Calmly respond to the stuff you don't agree with, and let's just move forward.
Nobody here
is perfect.
I have to admit, the phrase "the four horsemen" was a great piece of just shorthand. You knew exactly who people were talking about.
I only can remember who three of them were. What is it?
Dennett, Harris, Hitchens, Dawkins.
Hitchens. Yes. Okay. He's been dead a while.
That's
your excuse?
Sorry.
A guy dies, and all of a sudden, you don't count him as a horseman anymore.
Hitchens had lots of his own problems that were obvious for a long time.
Well, obviously he was deaf.
Hitchens is a guy who came into that with everybody knowing that he made a practice of saying some controversial things that a lot of people didn't agree with. Mm-hmm. This is normal, folks.
Right.
It really is normal. And unless we're talking about, you know, really important stuff or, like, you know, law-breaking stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
We should calm down. And I know, even saying those words, I know there are people for who some of these issues rise to that level in their minds. So even right. when we're talking about potentially illegal and arguably really bad stuff, can we throttle it back a couple of notches and at the same time recognize the contributions of these people and stop expecting them to have ever been perfect?
To be able to say anything about them, you have to realize that you can't match everyone's priorities.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
You just can't accommodate that.
All right.
And criticizing those people doesn't mean we're calling them pariahs right. or saying we have to run them out of town or anything. It just means we vehemently disagree with them about particular areas and would like to continue to talk about those things passionately
right.
despite their fame.
Yeah, and I think a lot of constructive mileage could be gotten out of not phrasing it that way, not saying, I disagree. Like, here's what I used to say. Uh-huh. I really deeply disagree with Sam Harris on a visceral, anger-inducing level on his statements about free will.
Okay.
Where I think he's totally fucking off base, and I think that that is a really serious issue. But it's not about Sam Harris, and it's also not about me. Okay. The where we ought to go, I think, and where I'm trying to go more is, if the issue is important, talk about the issue, right? And have the discussions and not make it be about personalities. That's our problem. Because right. our personalities are fallible human beings, right? And they're going to say some stuff we agree with and some stuff we don't agree with for various reasons. And that is normal.
Yep.
Right? But my good friend Dennis here, I disagree deeply and vehemently with Dennis on free will. You've heard it on the show. But Dennis and I are really good friends.
Yeah.
So.
But sometimes it's so much fun to tie your dislike of a topic with a particular person. Like, case in point.
Oh, are you segueing?
Uh-oh.
Dennis had something
He's
to say.
He's executing a segue.
My good friend Dennis,
I'm just saying,
who is totally fucked in the head about free will, would like to say something here.
All right, Dennis.
A pithy statement. Quote the quotables and roll your eyes at the other stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But then we got some people who are wrong about most things.
Yes.
Like Josh McDowell.
What?
Oh.
Now, imagine all the stuff I just said about, you know, our atheist icons and how we should recognize right. that they're normal human beings. I'm talking about our atheist icons. Josh McDowell is not one of our atheist icons.
No.
We can go He's ahead, an icon.
We can go ahead and get, you know, I don't know.
Well, I want to stress that it, like, the flip side of my position on Dawkins, I agree with him on most things, and
right.
then sometimes he says something that makes me roll my eyes. Josh McDowell, I would be surprised to find something I agree with him about. But if I did, I'd say it.
Right.
Hey, Josh McDowell's right here.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
But he's not.
here we ridicule most of the things he says and roll our eyes at the things we might agree with.
Yes.
So what nonsense did he say recently?
Well, I gotta say, I love Josh Dowell. In fact, I'm thinking of making him my arch nemesis. Uh-oh. Wait, this can't be right. No, he said something Uh-oh. Recently.
Okay, I'm just,
just pointing.
I just pointed out to. I actually touched the screen of Russell's laptop with my pencil lead, which I should never do.
But whiteout's okay.
The story Russell had on the screen is from January
2011.
Uh-huh,
2011.
That happens.
No, something new just came out, but I don't seem to. Oh wait,
well,
here
I'll
it
just
is.
Go
here
on.
It is. Here it is. Here it
Sorry.
is. But. The thing is, I want Josh McDowell to be my arch nemesis.
You do?
Yeah, because yeah. I've
so easy to defeat.
I just did a lecture this weekend, this past Sunday, about atheism and the internet. Because
I think that the
internet is the greatest thing to ever happen to atheism.
I have to agree.
Since I am a professional computer geek, I feel like this is one of my pet causes.
Sure.
And I quoted that 2011 Josh McDowell thing when he said, the internet's giving the bad guys equal access to your kids. It's leveling the playing fields. It's the biggest threat to Christianity out there. And I guess this is where I have to roll my eyes and say, okay, I agree with Josh McDowell.
Yeah, what's funny is some Christians think the internet is the greatest thing to happen to Christianity. We can reach so many people.
They're wrong.
Boy, are they wrong.
Josh McDowell's right.
Yeah, but this stuff about, you know, the internet being a big threat to religion is just a modern incarnation of, you know, living among the English is dangerous to our belief. We're going to have to go form our own little settlements out in the upstate New York,
the New World,
wherever it is that we like to go and live and have our sponge baths.
But and no one makes fun of us.
Are those guys with the buggies?
Amish.
Yeah.
Amish.
Everybody get the sponge bath reference? There's a famous sponge bath scene in Witness with Harrison Ford.
Sorry, I haven't seen it.
Sponge bathing Amish.
You know, nobody remembers that. Hot Amish toddies. You know.
I want to see SpongeBob Amish.
SpongeBob.
We don't have electric lights or phones.
That's right. That's all those fish people found it dangerous to live amongst the land dwellers, and that's why they live in the bottom of the sea.
Exactly.
So that we won't interfere with their beliefs.
So what did he say?
But if I may recap for a minute something I was saying in my lecture about why the internet is a genuine threat to Christianity.
Uh-huh.
It's because a lot of religion relies on sustained ignorance to an extent.
And yes.
Don't have doubts. I read a Bible quote that said that, you know, doubt is sin and everything must come from faith. You know, that's built into the religion. It's not an irrelevant side issue. It's, you know, hide from your doubts. Feel bad if you have doubts. It doesn't necessarily address the doubts, but it does say you're a bad person for entertaining them. And a lot of Christians, you know, haven't read their own Bible and will deny that some of the horrible bits that are in the Bible are actually in there. So being exposed to alternate points of view is the enemy of Christianity, in a sense.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that this is now Josh McDowell's pet cause, which is why I want him to be my arch nemesis.
Oh, because and the fact that you had a different story about him saying something on the same subject a year ago is evidence that that's 2 years ago, correct? Yeah. Is evidence that
right? You want to undo his efforts?
Well, I think you should send an email to his people and see if you can work that out.
Sure. Right? Maybe we can have some sort of brokered meeting or something.
Could you maybe have some sort of shared origin story? Because I find the best arch enemies, you know, somehow there's
a connection.
There's some connection in their past that, you know, makes it a better story.
Yes. So Josh McDowell, and this is from the Christian Post, Josh McDowell spoke at Southern Evangelical Seminary's Christian Apologetics Conference on three culture changes that create a perfect storm that challenges and poses a threat to the church. The first epistemological shift is occurring regarding biblical truths due to modern perspectives on God's word. We've had a major shift in what truth is and where it comes from. We've gone from being God-centered to self-centered, from being objective to being subjective, and from being internal to external.
Wow, fractally wrong.
Josh thinks that truth comes from being internal, which
You know, feels from right.
God talking straight to you, and you believe whatever the fuck God
as
says,
as opposed to your beliefs being tested against the external world to see if they're actually true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from that's a problem from for objective to subjective. My God, the irony.
Yeah. That's inherent. That's internally contradictory.
Right.
This is our internal views, and that makes them objective.
Wow.
Well, when Christians say that something is objective truth, I think what they mean is that it is not open to doubt.
Right, of course.
You know, regardless of how much sense it makes with respect to the facts that we can observe and collect from the real world,
right.
It does not change.
Yeah, clearly he's got a different definition of objective, and that what you're saying makes sense. Yeah.
In 1991, 51% of evangelical young adults said there is no truth from their own views. Today, that number is 91%, said McDowell.
There is such a thing as postmodernism.
Yes.
And it is a big steaming pile of crap.
Yes. That's so common ground, Josh.
That's true. You found something with Josh McDowell that you agree with.
Yeah.
You surprised? You said you were going to be surprised. He's wincing.
He's rolling his eyes.
I've heard this before from Christians.
Okay.
I've heard that they're very angry at postmodernism, and I am with them to some extent. It's just that our objections to postmodernism come from different places.
Right. Their objection to postmodernism is postmodernism says everything is just made up. And they don't like that because they want their beliefs to be recognized as true. And we don't like it because we recognize that, you know, actual verified, say, scientific findings are real things and not just made up.
Not social constructs.
They are not just social constructs. Yes, thank you. They're not just social constructs.
Okay.
That's why we don't like what they say.
I've just found something that I can make fun of him for being technologically ignorant.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm excited because I'm going to beat up on his math.
You're using – you have your power that targets his particular vulnerability.
Yeah, I have my power of understanding math.
Uh-huh.
The respected apologist also says, remember, when they say respected apologist, the source here is Christian Post.
Of course.
Also says the internet's exploding information plays a major factor in challenging the way young people view culture, the church, and their moral views. According to his research, millions of youths take in about 34 gigabytes of internet data each day, which is the equivalent to the amount of lyrics in 8,160 songs.
What?
Wait a goddamn minute.
Wait a minute.
34 gigabytes
That's
is not
nonsense.
An objective amount of information. If you read 34 gigabytes worth of plain text, you'd have a hell of a lot of information.
Wow.
If you watched 34 gigabytes worth of high-definition video, you'd have, like, 5 minutes of people saying stuff. That doesn't even make sense. What does it mean that you take in 34 gigabytes of internet data each day?
I mean,
if I listen to 5 minutes of a video of nonprofits with like an animated cat that's like really highly rendered in 3D and shit over it, am I learning more information than if I just read a, you know, 1K transcript of what we just said?
Right. He's using information and data as synonyms.
Yeah, people like to use big numbers in ways that people like to use big numbers to impress people without providing any context to it.
Yeah.
halt, Josh McDowell.
Yes.
I call bullshit on those numbers.
My intelligence sense is tingling. Yeah.
But nevertheless, he's right that people take in a lot of information from the internet every
day. Sure, sure.
And that a lot of that information has contradictory claims, and the only way to filter through it is to develop a mindset that you should be skeptical when you read, like, you know, I'm a Nigerian prince and I have $34 million to send you.
No, no, it's all true. It's the internet. They can't publish it if it's not true.
Right. But Josh is angry because there's too much different stuff that's not just Christianity. And the more competing stuff you have, the more you learn to hone your skepticism, which we all think is great.
Yes. Doubt is a virtue.
Here it is. Josh McDowell says, the unlimited amount of online information that people have access to has caused an increase in skepticism that will only continue to become more pervasive, says McDowell.
Yay!
Now, is there a connection between the amount of information online and an increase in skepticism?
That's a tough question, actually.
I would like that to be true. I would like it to be true that faced with a lot more stuff to wade through, people would become more cautious in their acceptance of that stuff.
Right.
Right? But I don't know if there's any statistical evidence to show that that's actually happening.
I mean, one of the things that does do is actually polarize people more, where they basically...
It could be, yeah.
They find the slant on a story that they want to go with, and, like, if they're super conservative, then they, you know, stick to Fox News and right-wing blogs, and they just kind of tune out the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, that's kind of a honed skill that, I mean... You know, there is some kind of filter that you have to develop. You can't pretend that the competing information isn't out there necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Curious.
Josh says, if you don't believe me, go around and talk to young people in colleges and junior high. Go and make truth statements, and you'll hear them say, how do you know that's true?
Nice. Were you there?
Oh, bite him in the ass. For every kid, even Christians, the age of the internet is wearing down their convictions because they think tomorrow they'll find something else. And they're right!
Yep.
That's the problem here.
That's the beauty.
Josh is railing against something that is just the way the world works now. And it's helping people to not blindly swallow the messages of Christianity. But there's nothing he can do about it. So,
I wish it was that easy to get evolution across.
Getting back to my earlier question of whether the availability of vast amounts of information on the internet is leading to more skepticism.
Yeah.
I don't know about any evidence one way or the other on that. But let's flip it around.
Okay.
Is there evidence that the availability of information on the internet is making things any harder for, say, science? As a scientific, rational-minded person,
on
I like
whole,
to think
I
myself.
On the whole, I would say no.
On the whole, I'd have to say yes.
Okay.
It's the fire hose of pseudoscience and crap.
But I think I'm exactly in the middle between you guys.
Oh, yeah?
I don't feel that the internet age poses a huge particular danger to rationalism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that the way that Josh McDowell obviously feels it.
Right.
Right. And that's my question. Do you feel like, holy crap, the internet is putting us all in danger?
No.
That's what I was asking.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. Certainly, it gives a platform to nonsense, but it's
not like
nonsense ever had lacked a platform before.
Right.
Is there something about science where if you're exposed to more viewpoints that it undermines science? In the way that being exposed to more viewpoints undermines Christianity? I think no.
I think no, also.
Well,
in the way where, I mean, scientists are not circling their wagons and saying, we've got to, you know, somehow save America's children from the internet. Mm-hmm. They are doing things, they are doing things like, you know, they're concerned, the scientific community is concerned about, like, bad scientific journals that do really poor peer review and stuff.
Right. There's that kind of concern.
And maybe that is a manifestation of the kind of thing Dowell's talking about, but it hasn't struck me that way.
Also, I mean, I think just in general when it comes to respect for science, first of all, I've been saying for a long time that respect for science, or at least lip service to respect for science, has been increasing so much for a long time that it is now no longer possible for Christians to just flat out say, well, science is bad, and be taken seriously. Uh-huh. Instead, they have to, like, put on their fake lab coats and do their cargo cult science and say, we're the real scientists. We're creationists who think that evolution isn't real science. So in that sense, just the fact that science is recognized as the right way to go about things, even when people are doing science wrong, I would say that's a win. And you've got, like, the Facebook community is like, I fucking love science.
Well, it's hard to think back. Sorry, go ahead.
Think back to the 60s.
Sure.
Space race. Everyone respected science, man. Getting us to the moon and all this stuff. Now, it's like everybody's bad-mouthing science.
How are they bad-mouthing science?
Oh, well, now the deniers.
Climate deniers, evolution deniers.
Although
and
even they still
ideologically driven deniers,
that they're doing
truthers,
it from a scientific
the whole bit.
Basis, right?
Huh?
They're still saying, I mean, they at least say, you know, we're the true skeptics and we're doing real science and those guys aren't doing science. They're wrong.
But there's a certain growing distrust of science, otherwise we wouldn't be having a lot of the problems.
Or maybe of experts
having.
In general. I mean, sort of like,
be.
You know,
sometimes
don't
science,
talk to economists. I, you know,
sometimes science does it
theory.
To itself. I mean, the conflicting views on what's good to eat. You know, you'll read something and say, oh, these things are great to eat. And then next day you'll
but
read
I mean,
an article and say,
cases,
oh, if you eat those, you have a greater chance of cancer. You know,
in a lot of cases, those
people
are,
can't parse
what,
that.
Like, you know, what is the optimal diet to use isn't necessarily a case. I mean, that's one of the edge cases where science doesn't necessarily have a totally objective answer to that.
And when things like that come up, is that science talking or is that marketing talking?
Yeah, some of it is
using the language of
well,
science.
Well, then it could be that marketing has been eroding confidence in science.
Because, one thing the internet has definitely done is lead to a huge increase in marketing. There's no question of that.
And apparently, if you talk to science, they have very little good to say about science reporting.
If you talk to science...
If you talk to scientists, they have very, very little good to say about science reporting. Yes, I am science.
The devil's not a guy, and neither is science.
Hey, I'm Mr.
He's a guy in a lab coat with heavy glasses.
We use frog DNA to fill in the holes in the code.
Thank you, science. All right. Yeah. Well, maybe the answer to my question of is a scientific endeavor facing the same kind of problems that McDowell's talking about with that the internet is causing for Christianity. Mm-hmm. Maybe the answer is not yes or no, but more like, well, yeah, certainly the internet poses a challenge for science education. Mm-hmm.
I do think it's true that faith has been eroding. I mean, you can actually have surveys on that say the people
who
identify with no religion has gone up really quickly in the last few years.
And is that getting replaced by scientific thinking?
Not in all cases.
Is there a general trend?
I don't have that information.
Yeah,
people don't know what to believe now that corporations can buy scientists.
Maybe that's the core of my question: if both sides are facing challenges from the internet, mm-hmm. is science winning? Huh. Maybe that's my question. And I don't know.
I don't know.
but when I hear about, you know, guys like Josh McDowell ranting and frothing at the mouth about this, and I don't hear equal concerns voiced on the other side, then I think science is probably winning. But it's just an impression. I don't have any statistics on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have more? Yeah, I think he had like three things he was going to talk about. Didn't you just do two, or is it, have you done all three?
Yeah, but they're not conveniently numbered. They're like the commandments.
Oh.
You know, could be that they split here, could be that they split there, you know. Let's see. Oh, okay. I think the third is that people are addicted to porn, which, whatever.
I have news for Josh McDowell. People liked porn even before the internet.
Yes.
And you could
what
get
What do you think all those meetings of naked ladies were for?
Wow. By the way, I just, for Sergio in the control room, because of our slightly rocky start today, I have failed to record the exact moment when we went
only
on
like
the,
a minute or two late.
Okay, but be aware that in here we are a minute or two
Sergio's
off from
got
where
it.
We actually are. Okay. So when we get to the end of the show, I don't know, we'll need some kind of a warning.
I can't quit McDowell yet. I just read what else he has to say about
all right.
He completes you.
The average person starts with heterosex, then after a while, that no longer satisfies. Then there's anal, from anal there's oral, from oral to homo, from homo to bestiality, and then to children.
Dude, there is perfectly heterosexual anal and oral sex.
Yes, what the hell?
What are you talking about?
Also, I think the progression usually goes oral first, then anal. But,
you think so?
That's what I would expect.
What was your personal experience?
I have no comment.
All right. All right. Wow.
But I have yet to make the transition from oral to homo. Not that I'm bragging, because good for people who go from oral to homo, but I'm just saying it doesn't seem to happen to everyone.
Wow.
Didn't Bob Puccinelli, the Attorney General of, is it Virginia?
Oh, he went from pornography to kidnapping people and putting them in his basement, right? Or something. Or am I thinking of someone else?
What?
No, that's the other creepy guy. He's a Democrat, I gotta say.
What?
Well,
who's
we
the other creepy guy?
We are here. We are actually not partisan. It just so happens that one side, you know, is way more likely. One side of the political dichotomy here in the States. One side just happens to fall much more firmly on the side of anti-science nonsense these days.
Right.
I've lost the train of my thought now. There was an effort in a state Ginelli. after it was shot down by the Supreme Court the Supreme Court said no, Texas can't enforce its sodomy laws and like control people's sexual behavior. This guy in his state tried to hit that same point again and tried to win on that point, and he lost, too.
Hmm.
And now he's running for governor.
Of course. They fail upwards. I hate that.
I'm pretty sure it's Cuccinelli, and I'm pretty sure it's Virginia.
I was thinking of... I'm trying to find the other guy, but I'm sorry. What do you need?
Cuccinelli sodomy.
Cuccinelli sodomy.
He's doing a Google search.
That just came up as a suggestion on Google. I typed Cuccinelli and it said, did you mean Cuccinelli sodomy?
Virginia Attorney General. Okay.
Don't Google Santorum.
I had my facts right. Yes. Just pump. Okay.
Wait, do you want me to read this?
No.
Okay.
I just wanted to I just wanted to check my facts. Thank you. I was right. Okay.
Hey, dead air. We can't have that.
So back to worship and morality. Another letter on the subject. Hi, guys. I haven't heard such a thought-provoking moral question in some time, and I thought I could add something to the conversation. It seems you guys tentatively settled on the conclusion that abdicating all your moral judgment to another makes future moral decisions amorally lazy. I would like to tentatively disagree because I don't believe that it is possible to suspend all moral judgment in the context of the human condition. All of us, save psychopaths, have an innate sense of empathy which we cannot turn off even if we worship some other entity. So future moral decisions can either harmonize or be dissonant with that innate sense of empathy. In the cases where they harmonize, I can see that being amorally lazy at worst and moral at best. In the case where they are dissonant, however, it seems there must be a conscious moral decision to ignore one's own empathy and allow the dictates of the worshiper or the worshipee to override it. Wouldn't this be an immoral act?
I can't argue with that. I mean,
I can't.
We do have. Even if we say we're giving ourselves over to this other being and worshiping it and stuff like that, I don't know how you could not make your own decisions even in that environment. I mean,
well, what he's saying is we have an automatic, innate, instinctive sense of
right, what's right and wrong.
Well, he makes the jump from morality to empathy, and I'm sorry, you can't make that jump not that clearly.
True.
Right? There are all kinds of cases where, in fact, some of the most interesting moral dilemmas are where there's a button at the bottom of the well that will stop the bomb that's going to kill the entire planet, and your loved one is dangling into the well, and you've got her by in your hand, and you're holding her.
Right.
But if you let go and she falls, she'll hit the button and save the world at the cost of killing her. Right.
Right.
Those kinds of moral dilemmas are the more
Stacy
interesting.
In a school bus?
Yeah. There was no button that was going to save the world in the Gwen Stacy situation, though. So, Spider-Man, for those of you not following the comics. So I think that is a shaky connection. You cannot assume that just because you have an emotional impulse to act one way or another, that your moral impulse equals your impulse equals morality. Acting the way you feel like acting is not the same thing as acting morally. Acting morally in many cases means paving over your own impulse and doing something you understand to be more right, even though it hurts.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, and I think that Christians do that all the damn time. In fact, in practice, right, where they may not like the idea of injecting somebody with a lethal drug to execute them, right? They may emotionally rebel at the idea of killing another human being that way. But if they are morally convinced that execution is a reasonable thing for the state to do, and I should get this off of Christians because this is just a death penalty versus not death penalty thing.
Right.
There's Christians on both sides. I need to try to do a Christian one then. I'm not going to waste more time on it. The point is, yes, people can override their personal emotional impulses, and that itself can be a moral act.
Right.
So that's where I'm disagreeing. But he said, food for thought,
that
all the best.
That's an interesting thing.
That's John. Yes, that's a very good point. It was definitely something we had not touched on before.
Right.
And it was totally worth the discussion. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay. Yeah?
Can I just say, just because this was bugging me, the other creepy guy I was trying to think of was Mayor Bob Filner, who just pleaded guilty to felony false imprisonment.
Wow.
And
it's a former
former San Diego mayor.
Was he doing this while he was mayor?
While he was mayor, yes, he was. He also pleaded to two misdemeanor counts of battery for sexually harassing three women while in office. But it was battery, so I guess there was assault involved as well.
Misdemeanor, battery. Battery's bad. It's always bad, right?
Yeah.
And you should never do it. But there are extremes of battery.
Right.
And that would be the mildest extreme that's recognized by law.
If you want something that will haunt your dreams, type into Google Bob Filner grinning.
Wow, it's the Joker.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, this is not relevant to atheism, but, you know, equal opportunity.
We follow our trains of thought here.
Don't beat women, and don't illegally imprison them either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or men.
Or men.
No.
Don't beat or imprison human beings.
Right.
Or animals.
Okay.
Basically.
Plants.
Imprison.
Plants. I don't know if Ms. Naiad would object to this since she brought up plants.
She did bring up plants.
She went there talking to Oprah, but I'm all right if you want to beat up on a plant.
Right.
Or imprison it. I'm okay with that. Personally, I don't know. That might make me a bad person.
I would beat up a plant and feel bad for a second.
We did get one email. We did get one mail from the other side of the worship discussion. I am a young god king of Incatun. I have been told since birth that I am descended from the one sun god. I have in fact seen the genealogical charts by the holy priests to prove this. I have no reason to doubt the veracity of my divinity. Is not my rule of the kingdom in and of itself not proof enough? In any case, I truly believe in my divine right. I carry out the will and presence of my ancestor, the sun god, here on earth now. I must keep Incatun well ruled, well ordered, provided, and cared for. Being divine, it is necessary for all to worship me. For to do not would be not only blasphemy and sacrilege, which must be punished, but will bring about depravity and the eventual downfall of my kingdom. No doubt, ultimately invoking the wrath of my holy ancestor, bringing harm to all my good and faithful subjects. Thus, I must command the faithful worship of myself by all through praise, song, and sacrifice. I expect it, I command it, and require it in order to provide for the well-being of the nation. I truly care for the eternal souls of all those placed in my protection, so worship me now, or I must mete out divine retribution for the good of Incatun. And I think the correct answer there is no. Worship is not moral just because you claim to be a god. When you claim to be a god, you are a psychopath.
No, no. When someone asks you if you're a god, you always answer yes.
So that doesn't
necessarily mean
answering yes. That was a strategic move on the part of the Ghostbusters to avoid their immediate death. And I'm all in favor of if a giant marshmallow monster. No, it wasn't the marshmallow monster.
No,
if a demon goddess from ancient Mesopotamia is about to zap you with lightning bolts, I am all in favor of lying through your teeth so you can get out of there without being fried.
Fair enough.
Or eaten by her gargoyle dog things come to life.
Yes.
Right? I'm totally okay with that. What that probably does not entail is writing a letter like this and making these claims. I don't think that... But if somehow you had to write something like this screed I just read in order to avoid being fried by the ancient Mesopotamian demon, I would say go for it. So unless Brian, you're lying through your teeth.
Why would you think that?
If you're lying through your teeth, that's fine. Otherwise, you're a psychopath or sociopath? What's the correct term for I think I'm a god?
The difference is very subtle.
One of those two things. We'll leave that to the armchair psychiatrists, psychologists, and any actual psychologist listening to us.
At least one of them means that you have no feelings of human empathy.
Right.
He said he did, though. He said that he cared about the eternal souls.
He's not that one.
But I do have to say it was a hell of a fun read.
Which one was that, then?
I don't know. I have to say, I don't like encouraging listeners to write this kind of letter, because then we're just
we'll get a ton of it
flooded by bad comedy, and I just have better shit to do with
my time. I will point out that Brian did not tell us where he is from, but I think I recognize the email address, which means I think it's a Brian who I know in Michigan.
Oh.
And therefore a personal acquaintance of mine. That's why I read his letter.
Right.
No, this is not. We are not sending out a call for whatever creative writing projects you would like to send to us.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not a publishing house, and we don't have editors on staff who read your shitty comedy.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you know Jeff personally, go ahead.
Knock yourself out.
Oh, you can folks. You, of course, we can't stop you sending in whatever you feel like sending in. I'm just telling you, don't get your hopes up about us reading something you wrote just because you put a lot of work into it.
Don't expect to hear it, but be pleased if it's
there. Too much work into it. Expect not to.
Our goal is to do a good show. Not our goal is not specifically to cater to your needs. Sorry,
we're bastards that way.
Okay, do we have any more news we can do in the last couple of minutes of the show?
We can do some more news.
We can do one quick one. Really quick one.
Oh, look, this is about Uganda. It's like we've come full circle.
And what is the Ugandan for
fuck you, God?
That thing from Disney.
Oh, Hakuna Matata?
What's Ugandan for Hakuna Matata?
Hakuna Matata.
All right.
I did read an article just recently. They took the references to God out of the Scouts Oath in the UK.
Good for them.
Yay.
Yes, good for them.
Yeah.
Bishop, I don't know if this guy's actually from Uganda, but his name is Christopher Senionjo, and he was excommunicated from the Church of Uganda for his opposition to the country's severe culture of homophobia.
Oh.
Senionjo talked to somebody about a new documentary called God Loves Uganda that examines the culture clash between enthusiastic Midwestern missionaries and world-weary Ugandans. I'll just remind people that Uganda is where the Kill the Gays bill has shown up.
Right.
And the Kill the Gays bill that says that you can legally kill people for being gay was encouraged by American missionaries, and fuck the hell out of them.
Yes. Evil.
The missionaries have been trying to preach the gospel, but the way they have been preaching, one wonders whether it is really good news, Senionjo said. Gospel means good news, but when you tell people that if you don't change being what you are going to destroy the country like Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, you cause a lot of hatred. This guy does look quite Ugandan.
Uh-huh. Wow, that was an incredibly racist thing to say.
Sorry. Senionjo said churches around the world should speak out and tell followers that being gay is not a sin. Many people think LGBTQ is in itself a sin, whereas you cannot say being heterosexual is a sin. It's the way you live your life, he said. If God has created you like that, you have to use what God has given you in the way you think will give glory to you and to your God.
Wow. I just so wish he would stop using talking about God, because none of that has anything to do with what some imaginary guy in the sky thinks.
I do, too, but I would rather people believe in an imaginary guy in the sky that doesn't command you to murder people.
Yeah.
I suppose so.
That would be a help.
On the whole, in
baby
a practical
steps.
Sense.
Baby steps.
One last piece of... One last piece of listener mail,
mm-hmm.
and then I think we're getting close to wrapping up the show, though I haven't gotten any...
Thank no God.
Jim writes, it's funny because I always assumed the Pope would sound something like Father Guido Sarducci.
Yeah.
Yes, that
would be an Italian.
Like Guido Sarducci.
Thank you, Jim. The Pope does not sound like me because the Pope is, of course, South American.
Yes.
And I, Father Guido Sarducci, I am Italian. So that
thanks,
would be
Father.
That
there you
would
go.
Be from someplace else. By the way, our the host of the show, Jeff D, has linked to a YouTube video of my two comedy albums on his Facebook wall. So if you want to, you know, listen to me saying funny things, that's me saying the funny things on the wall. Thank you.
You do funny things.
Thank you. Arrivederci.
I'm a big fan.
All right. That's a minute left, Dennis.
All right.
I will burn some of this minute, giving you a moment to compose yourself.
My completely.
Because I know that you are not prepared to take us out of the show.
That's right.
Okay. But it is time.
Except I did a bit of research.
Yeah.
And we'll be seeing you in 3 Wednesdays.
3 weeks.
Yes, 3 weeks. This is the time. The end time, yes. The end of the month time. So we'll be back then on, what would it be?
Well, it'll be the first Wednesday in November.
In November.
So we don't have a... Really? We don't... Oh, wow. We're getting nowhere near having a Halloween show.
October, November. Aww. It would be everybody November 6th.
Everybody have a spooky Halloween.
Yay.
Yay.
Ooh. Okay. End the show, man.
All right. Well, I just did. We'll be back then with another episode.
Okay. We all have right. No idea if we are if we've got the timing right here.
Or if the music's starting up.
I hear the music coming in.
There it goes.
That's beautiful.
Bye-bye.
We'll just let that music
Sergio,
run as long as it
rock.
Needs. Yes, thank you. Sergio in the control room. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Woo.
Bye-bye.
Take your head.